Welcome to the HMO Success Podcast. I'm your host, Wendy Whittaker-Large, and I'm here to help you create a profitable HMO portfolio. Whether you're a brand new investor or you've been at it for a number of years, my podcast is here to help you make the most from your business, whether that is starting up, scaling, or systemizing. Please hit the subscribe button to make sure you never miss an episode. And if you've got an awe-inspiring project, an inspirational investing story, or a unique approach to HMOs, I'd love to hear from you. Hello and welcome to the HMO Success Podcast. This week I have a wonderful interviewee for you to listen to. Now, this guy, I have to say, I'm somewhat in a little bit in awe of him because I met him a few years ago. And at that stage, our businesses were probably of a similar size, although maybe his was a little bit bigger than mine at the time. And since then, he's gone on to grow that business, but actually stepped back from it. And he's now developed a second business. This particular individual is an award-winning entrepreneur. He's a property investor. He's a professional speaker, he's a chartered accountant, and he knows HMOs inside and out. So today, ladies and gentlemen, I'm very pleased to invite onto my podcast none other than Josh Keegan.
Thank you very much. Quite an introduction.
Hello, Josh. Very, very good to have you here today.
It's a pleasure to be here. And obviously, we were just talking before we press record. Not spoken to you properly for a good few years. So it's nice to actually properly catch up. I don't know where that time's gone.
It's amazing, isn't it? Well, of course, you've also been producing other things than just refurbs since then.
Yes.
Children.
Yeah, second baby's just 6 weeks old now. So yeah, two almost under two. But yeah.
Amazing.
It's actually been okay. It's been fine.
Very good. Very well. Congratulations. That's very good news. Now, you and I met Josh, didn't we, way back when the Manchester Property Breakfast was meeting. In fact, they've gone back to meeting in person, but this is a networking event that's held in Manchester once a month, early doors breakfast meeting, where lots of property investors have been through those doors, and that's where you and I met. And at the time, you were running your HMO business called Zest Property Management, I believe was the name of the company. So I'd love to just kind of go back to those days a little bit and just find out some of the starter ways in which you got involved in HMOs, because I don't think really I knew you from the very beginning. We met at that stage where we had these nascent businesses, and I think you were developing yours. So just take us back to that point, maybe, you know, a decade or so ago. How did you get started in HMOs?
Well, that was about, I got started about seven years or so ago. And it was kind of a happy accident, really. Me and one of my best friends were living in a flat in Manchester, and we thought, rather than rent a place together, let's go and buy somewhere. And I was very fortunate that I knew a man that I met a few years before who was Phil. You obviously knew Phil very, very well. And he was, at the time, he just found this kind of new concept, which was HMOs. And it was at the time where no one really knew about professional HMOs. It's more kind of student geared towards the student market. And those people that were doing professional HMOs, it was quite early days, and it was very much in a very popular area. So it might be in the Manchester borough, like the actual, if you look at like Greater Manchester, for example, the Manchester borough is like the city centre, but they weren't being explored in the kind of satellite towns and different places. And he was just on the brink of starting something new, which is converting some of his single lets into high-end, really high-end professional house shares. And these are in places like Rochdale and Bury and all these kind of areas, which now are littered with HMOs. But at the time, it was like, is that really going to work? Is that going to happen? And so he was doing that. Unfortunately, I contacted him at the right time. He just had a baby, but he came and chatted to me and he said, look, rather than you guys buy a single let together, why don't you buy HMO and then rent all the rooms? So that's what we did. So me and my friend, we just bought our first house together. It's now been subsequently sold, but we bought it for a very, very reasonable price. It was £120,000 at the time. Over like about 6 to 9 months, we actually renovated it ourselves. We added on a couple of en suites in, etc. Spent about £25,000 because we did all the work ourselves. And at the end of that, we had this property where me and him were living in it, obviously kind of rent free. We were paying rent just to almost be like tenants, but it was basically coming back to us, so it's basically rent free. And then we just rented the other three rooms out to friends. So we just had this awesome house where we were basically getting paid to live there. And we had our first kind of professional HMO. And that's where I got started, really. And that was the first one. So what happened was we were in a place where Phil was entrepreneur, property, very, very much head in the clouds, like looking to kind of scale this portfolio. I was a chartered accountant, like just, you know, just finished my exams. And he knew he needed kind of that kind of maybe that skill set to be brought in so we could scale and create a business. So I quit my job. And then we basically started what became Zest. And Zest initially, the idea was we would just set a company up to almost allow him the ability to have this hands-free property portfolio. So the idea was we're going to create like a small managing agency, and that was going to manage his portfolio for him. And then we were going to try to increase cash flow by doing rent-to-rent. So for anyone that doesn't know what rent-to-rent is, which I'm sure they would if they listen to your podcast, you lease a property from a landlord and then you basically then rent out on top that on a multiple room basis. So you're paying £500 a month and you do a small conversion, turn it to five rooms, and you're achieving £2,500 a month. Obviously got bills, utilities, and everything that comes with that. So it's not quite as lucrative as it sounds, but there's some margin there for you in the middle. And that was our plan. It was basically to kind of have his portfolio manage and then grow these rent to rents and get like the company to a place where it could sustain everyone's salary and what everyone was taking. But I think it probably took about 3 months for somebody then to say to us, well, could you manage my property for us? And we said, yeah, okay. So we took it on. So we started managing for other people. And that just grew so quickly because at the time there was very few professional HMO managing agents. There's a lot of them now, but at the time there were very, very few. We were kind of one of the first, particularly in our area. And that grew quickly. We like literally people throwing keys at us and you manage this, manage that. And there are a lot of challenges with HMO management, as you know, Wendy, even more challenging when you're doing it for other people, which I think you know as well. And back then we didn't know how to do it. Like there wasn't anyone else that had done it. So we were just kind of learning how to work out the system and make it all work. Shortly after that, people started saying, well, you're going to manage it for me. Wouldn't it be good if you found the property for me as well? So we started sourcing properties, renovating them for people, then manage them. We had this full kind of turnkey service. And if you kind of fast forward the journey, yes, Phil got very, very sick at some point. So he had to step out. I had to step up. And like to summarize the story, over kind of a 6-year period, we kind of just kept growing that business from strength to strength. We consolidated, we focused on profitability. We had some real cash issues and we sorted them out. And then eventually we got to a place where I was fortunate enough to be able to kind of step back from the day-to-day operating of the actual company. I was working about 90 minutes a week on running the business. We were managing around 375 units, roughly, team of 10. And it was really good margins within that as well. And then at the end of 2021, we decided to actually sell that on to a new buyer, and it's still ongoing today with similar team, new person running it, a new person in place. But that's the journey of over kind of a 6 or 7 year period.
Amazing, absolutely amazing. I mean, it's fantastic to hear what you did, and I do remember at the monthly meetings that we would go to, and you know, you'd be talking about maybe a new development or a new area, or you always had something new to bring, and you were able to bring a lot of insight into what was happening in the market at the time. And yes, this podcast obviously speaks to many people who are interested in HMOs. They're looking at developing HMOs. They may be investing in HMOs, or they might be thinking of getting out of HMOs. You know, there's a life cycle of an HMO. There's a life cycle of an HMO owner. And in today's environment, that life cycle is probably getting shorter, sad to say. Mm. How important do you think it is to know your area when it comes to investing in HMOs?
I think it's incredibly important to know your area, but I would say on the flip side of that, people can get very, very caught up in it. So it's good to know your area. It's good to know what prices you should be buying things for. It's good to know what your estimated room rents, etc., are going to be. But I'd say something that people underestimate, is when you launch a really high quality product, it's never a question of if you're going to fill it, it's when it will be filled. And some areas just take longer than others, I'd suggest. But I think, I guess this is part of you knowing your area. I think there are different areas for investing. And I think it's just knowing the characteristics of your area is really important, just to get expectations right and make sure you're stacking deals correctly. I think that's super important. But I think HMOs, and I think now as well, we're kind of having a bit of a bounce back in terms of, like, you know, rents are rocketing, people can't afford to rent flats by themselves. Demand seems to be through the roof. I'm not avoiding one of mine for absolutely ages. And I think it's like now more than ever, I think if you put some good quality stock in the marketplace, price reasonably, it will fly. So I think obviously knowing your area is important, but I'd say some people get so caught up in trying to work out, you know, to the meter how far a school is, or doing all this crime report searches, etc. I think generally you just want to know that there's going to be markets, going to be a bit good demand there. And if you put a good quality product, I think you'd be okay.
So you can definitely get analysis paralysis, can't you?
Yes. Yeah, 100%. And you see it all the time. And you'll see it so much. I imagine people reach out to you and want to speak to you about mentoring and one-to-one opportunities or whatever. But you get these people that have been, you know, looking at deals for years or months and months and months. And it's just at some point, you've just got to kind of go and do and just know that it will kind of work its way out. Obviously, make sure that the fundamentals stack, the return on investment's there. You know, you're not going to spend too much. You're not going to spend maybe more than the value of the properties can be worth at the end, and those kind of basic features. But I think overall, it's a long-term game. And I think that the market from a demand perspective, it's been hotter than it's ever been. So I say from that perspective, probably most people are relatively safe from a perspective of prices and, you know, return on capital employed and looking at interest rates, etc. That I'd say that's the area which you need to be kind of more clued up on at the moment, just given what's happening in the actual market.
So it's really interesting hearing you say that, because you know, I think that's very important that people do get educated on the macroeconomic picture as well, and we'll move on to that. Before we do though, I want to ask you a little bit about some of the challenges you had in growing the business, because I think that although the environment now is very different from, say, it was 5 or 6 years ago financially, growing a business, you often have the same kind of challenges and the same kind of you know, cycles that anybody has to overcome. What was it like for you growing Zest?
Growing that business was incredibly challenging, I think, for a number of reasons, and then I'll go into some of the challenges. I think it was quite a bespoke business at the time. Like, as I said, it wasn't like we could just copy another letting agency, because a HMO specialist company for professionals is quite unique. So it's quite challenging from that perspective. But also, I think probably one of the biggest challenges of growing that business itself is you're an agent trying to keep everybody happy. And on one side, you've got 400 tenants. And on the other side, you've got, you know, 100 or so landlords. Landlords want to keep costs down. They want everything to be incredible, but they don't want to pay for it. Tenants want everything to be incredible, and they expect the landlords to put into the pocket all the time. And to sit in the middle and just try and please everybody all the time, it's like an agency is incredibly hard business to run, because you've got, it's quite unique in that you've got over, I don't know, 500, 600 clients, and actually you've got a team of 10. So it's like, I think from that perspective, it can be quite challenging. I think in terms of like scaling a company, I think everybody struggles with different elements. And I think there's three kind of main key elements, which are the most challenging parts. But once you get them right, they're also the bits that kind of set you free and allow the business to have an incredible exit value, allow you to step away and allow it to become really like lucrative kind of entity. First, I'd say is just team. So it's having like good quality people that are running the operations of the actual business for you. Extremely challenging to find the right people. I think I looked at it a few weeks back. I think over the kind of course of 5 or 6 years, which I own that company, and bearing in mind the end result was about a team of 10 that ran the business so well and effectively that allowed me to totally step back, like literally 90 minutes a week, which was my one-to-ones with those team members, three key team members. But it took me about 55, 60 recruits to get to that point. So we had to go for about 60 people to eventually end up that 10. If you imagine like the kind of stress, the pressure, the changeover, people leaving, and how kind of challenging all that is over when the business is constantly changing and growing. I think like team management and performance management in particular is probably one of the most challenging things in any business if you want to scale something that you can step away from. Second one I'd say is probably linking to the team would be all the systems. So it's actually kind of in building and creating systems that are going to run the business for you. So on the EMIF, and Michael Gerber says the people run the systems run the business. And I totally believe that the systems run the business, and you just got to get the right team members to actually run those systems. But getting the right systems in place is very challenging, because you can go for something that's highly, highly bespoke, custom built for you, but it's expensive. And the reality is, whenever you want to change, it doesn't change with you very quickly. You can go for lots of different off-the-shelf products and link them all together, like Asana, Trello, Arthur Online, whatever you want, and just try and link them all together. But then they don't really speak to each other, so you've got to work out how you kind of manage all those different things together. And it's very hard to keep that whole thing simple, yet allow your clients to actually have a really incredible service as a result. So once again, it's just a very difficult kind of nut to crack. Final kind of big challenge is all around finance and cash, I'd say. Like actually getting, when you've got a fast growth company, getting a grip on your numbers and knowing actually how much margin you've made, what your profitability is, what you need to grow to actually have made it, what you need to grow to make sure you can draw whatever it is you want to draw every single month from the company, knowing what you can discount your sales to, knowing where all your cash is, knowing how solvent you are, make sure your balance sheet is accurate at all times. I think managing cash was always difficult, or it was difficult for a while until we managed to kind of solve that as a problem and kind of get past that and create some mechanisms in place to make that much, much easier. So some of them, I think team, systems and cash, those are the three things which I found the most challenging. And once you overcome them, the results are pretty awesome, but they're always difficult things. And I think most entrepreneurs on their journey at some point will struggle with at least one of those, if not all of them.
Josh, I think that's a fantastic answer. And your answer there, is evidence of, first of all, the fact that you are a chartered accountant. So a lot of your business mindset and your knowledge may have come from that initial training. But I'm sure that you would agree there's nothing like actually putting it into practice to see the reality of what you might have learned in the classroom. And that sometimes, it's only when you put it into practice and you see the reality of it that you realize why these things are important. Now, what's really exciting about what's happened to you since those heady days of Zest, when you were, you're facing these challenges and overcoming them and having to go through all that work and the effort to get through all your 65 or so people to get the 10 that you finally landed on, was that, of course, through that process, you were not just developing a lettings agency or an HMO management company. You as a person were developing. How did your experience of running that business and recognizing that those are the challenges, plus probably many others, that helped you develop as a person, as an individual?
I think that's it. And I think when you're actually in the moment having those challenges, and no matter how many times you tell yourself that this is going to be good for you, and overall this is going to kind of, pressure makes diamonds, like that over a period of time this is going to have changed you fundamentally, it's going to make your experience better, it's going to make you a better entrepreneur. When you're in it, it's hard to remember that. But yeah, in hindsight, 100%, I'm so grateful for the challenges, I'm grateful for the sleepless nights. I think what we do now has been born from the challenges that we experienced. So the third one on there, cash, was all around, we basically totally, totally messed up. And your point of it's like it's being in the classroom then trying to do this in reality, it's such a good one, because although I was a chartered accountant, I was working for a massive multi-£1 billion defense company, and I went to running like a very small business, and complacently I thought, well, it's easy to set off all the numbers in this kind of company. But the reality is I was also unexpectedly now leaving that business, I still had to step out, doubling in size year on year. And there's no way in hell I could possibly stay in control like I thought I was going to be able to. So if you think about how it's developed me as a person, like I accidentally let it spin out of control. It was almost like the most embarrassing moment of my entire career when I realized this business could be gone tomorrow as a result of me not giving enough focus to the numbers, which was meant to be my profession. And it was a really tough time. But as a result, the products of suite and services and products that we do now as part of the new company is very much designed to stop that happening for anybody else. So in so many ways, it's these negative experiences or these challenging experiences as development as a person, but it's also actually provided me an entire portfolio suite of products and services that if I didn't go for any of these, I probably wouldn't exist.
And that's sometimes the power of pain, that you can, whether it's through business or through life, that if we keep going as individuals, if as human beings we resolve to find the strength and the determination and the sort of mindset to carry on, you know, who has truly run a business and said it's always been plain sailing? Of course, they wouldn't be telling the truth if they said, yes, it's always been easy. It's tough, it's difficult, it's hard. You have those challenges. And I can hear from what you're saying that, you know, that moment when you perhaps realize that, oh my goodness me, I haven't perhaps managed the cash flow in the right way, or I've messed up here, you know, and people looking to you, but Josh, you know, you're the chartered accountant around this building. We need you to manage the money. That's your job. It's sometimes those moments though, that as you say, that's where the diamond, the pressure on that piece of coal, that carbon produces the diamond. And from that experience and from that time in your role in Zest, has something else has amazingly, you know, come out of the ashes of that. Well, not actually that it wasn't ashes, because as you say, you managed to sell the business and you put it right and created a fantastic asset which you know, it now is in the hands of somebody else. So let's talk about what happened after that, because this is very interesting and exciting. Following your departure from Zest, another idea was born, which kind of brings together now that real life business experience, the day-to-day managing the HMOs, your own, other people's, and also your financial background. So tell us a little bit about Ultimate FD, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, of course. So Ultimate FD all kicked off and started probably in while Zest was happening. And one of the, I used to get approached by people who and they'd say, can you give us some mentoring on buying HMOs? And I'd say, yeah, that's absolutely fine. So I'd agree to a sort of price and we'd start working together. And within like the first session, the first thing I'd ask them is like, you know, where do you want to get to? What does good look like for you? And they'd say, well, we want to get to about $8,000 a month, or normally it's $10,000. It's the kind of golden number for most people. But whatever that target was, so say it was £10,000 a month, and I go, oh, that's cool. So where are we now? And then they start scrabbling around. They're like, oh, well, I think, you know, because of this, but we keep running out of money and you get all this stuff. And I was like, can I see like a P&L from your prior last month, just so I can see kind of what the profitability looks like? And there's no way in hell they could provide me with anything like that. And it was basically quite interesting. And I think I kind of had this consistent thing with clients. It was always the same question. So where are we now? And they just couldn't tell me. And what I realized was the mistakes that I made when I was scaling the agency, which basically almost got caught out on from the perspective of we misstated VAT. We accidentally spent some of our clients' money because just as a result of like not having the financial systems and the financial clarity in place. This was going on everywhere. I thought it was just me. I thought it was just an embarrassing thing that I'd done, but no one I was speaking to actually had clarity on the books, on their P&Ls, on the balance sheets, and everything that they needed to run a successful business. And so that was how Ultimate FD started, because it was like, what we're going to do then is we'll do some work with you to get that up and running. And then I could actually mentor people properly. And then all of a sudden, you know, I became an FD for them and give them kind of property mentorship. Fast forward a couple of years and after the kind of the selling of Zest and kind of deciding what to do, I think it was like I could either just kind of stop. My portfolio was doing relatively well. I could stop, or I could have another project. And I tried taking about 6 months off with family, and we did a lot of traveling and stuff. And although I enjoyed it, I still feel like there was kind of like a a nagging sense of I want to do something still, like I want to kind of keep producing and building something. So what we decided to do is we launched Ultimate FD more officially. And so what Ultimate FD actually does is do the bits that I didn't do well. So when you've built a portfolio of, you know, three or four limited companies, you've got this large HMO portfolio, maybe a managing agent, maybe you've got a development company. And, you know, what happens is as property entrepreneurs, we really don't want to pay any tax. So whenever we're like, think that it's going to be a problem paying tax, we go and speak to our tax accountant, and the tax accountant's advice is, oh, just set up another limited company. So all of a sudden we get these group structures with five or six different entities, and the tax accountants love it because you pay them for every single one. You've got six different property companies, you're throwing money between each one, and everyone's lending money from the other. You're taking investor money here, shoving it in that one, doing developments in this one. And all of a sudden you've just got an absolute mess of, and it's beyond a level that you could potentially sort out. So people try, they go and get a bookkeeper from the Philippines, but the reality is that person's probably underqualified to do what we need them to do. Or they go and speak to their tax accountant, they try and get and they pay a fortune for somebody that's overqualified, so they're paying way too much. But in reality, they can never kind of seem to sort out the mess and finally get clarity on what the actual situation of the business is. So what we do is now it's like, that's the situation I was in. We spent 18 months and spent about £60,000 sorting that out. But now we do that for other people. Like, we're using the expertise and knowledge we have for like a fraction of £60,000. It was just, I didn't know how to solve that solution in the first place. We do it very quickly, very efficiently and effectively, leaving them with financial clarity, a team of people managing their accounts for them. And then they've got management accounts, reports, and everything that they need to actually run their business successfully. That's essentially what we do. And then there's stuff that we do after that as FDs as well, but that's probably the crux and the kind of largest product.
And I think it's an absolute, you know, godsend into the industry, because you're absolutely right, Josh, that the hundreds of people that I have spoken to and the tens of people that I've mentored, none of them, perhaps bar one or two very rare individuals, have their financial system sorted out. In fact, many of them, when you say, you know, do you have a P&L, they look at you blankly like, what's a P&L? Now, of course, that's because many of them are entrepreneurs through and through. They've gone to maybe a couple of training courses, they've read some stuff, they've perhaps looked at some YouTube videos, they've got some money sitting in the bank, and they decide, I know what I'm going to do, I'm going to invest in HMOs, I'm going to make £1,000 a month profit from turning this three-bed house into a five or six-bed HMO, and I do that four or five times, and, you know, I can give up my job. And once I can give up my job, then I can do this full time, and you know, that will be it. That'll be me made. But as you rightly point out, the problem is if you haven't got systems in place really from quite early on, so that you can scale up, within 2 or 3 years you're in an absolute pig's ear of a mess, and people will ask questions, and your accountant will ask you questions, your mortgage company will be asking questions, your accountant will be tearing their hair out when it comes to year end and when it comes to putting in your personal tax return, because they won't have all the facts and figures and the details and the data there to do it. And so suddenly you're having to pay them more. And of course, then the relationship becomes frosty, because they blame you because you haven't got your receipts and your paperwork and your spreadsheets in order. You think they don't understand you because you're an entrepreneur and you're trying to produce good quality homes for people, and the money is and the figures are not really your big thing. You're there just to utilize them to create a product, and you create this vicious cycle. And what happens is, if you don't get in control of your finances and you don't know what the numbers look like, either, I think, really one of two things can happen. Number one is you'll slow down because you can't develop and you can't scale, because you're going to get stuck in the mud of the financial element. Or number two is you hit a brick wall and you have to stop entirely, because you suddenly realize that there's more month than money. There's more cash going out than there is coming in. And you haven't actually looked at the figures. You haven't looked at the pluses and the minuses. And that's what I see happening with a lot of people, is that they either slow down and they can't grow and develop, or they just come to a shuddering stop. So within Ultimate FD, you can provide some of the services that can enable people to get unstuck.
Yeah, some of them. And I think that most entrepreneurs fit in, well, most entrepreneurs spend their lives actually building businesses that make any money. And the risk is scaling a portfolio is a real risky game. And one of the reasons for that is because we all stack deals and we work out this return on investment that we're going to get. How often do we actually look at what actual return on investment we achieved versus what was on paper? Like, I don't know a single investor whose refurb doesn't go over budget, who doesn't get slightly different rents to what they expected, who's ends up with higher valuation fees than they expected, who actually stacks that. And property is quite dangerous because it's got recurring revenue and it's got large chunks of cash, which basically means you can quite easily mask quite a systemic problem. So one of the first things that people, like when people kind of realize they've got a problem, the balance starts going down. But if you're constantly taking additional loans from investors, if you're constantly getting refinances, if you're constantly just moving money up to many, many multiple different accounts, and then you've got your rental income coming in every single month, it can really hide a lot of kind of real challenging problems. Your property could be losing a few £100 a month, but if you get a 50 grand loan from an investor this month, you're never going to notice that, and it'll always kind of come out in the wash. And it's, I've seen it so many times where if you look inside people's portfolios, you actually kind of see, go behind the veil and see what's going on. They're spending a fortune on maintenance that they didn't realize. Mortgages have gone from fixed rates to variable rates and they just shot up through the roof. They've got voids in their portfolio they didn't even know about because they've got an agent managing it for them and they couldn't even see it. The agent's VAT registered that they didn't know and they thought they were just a normal rate. And all of a sudden you've gone for a property that stat on paper was going to make £1,000 a month to making 100, 150. That only needs five or six little changes and all of a sudden you've gone back up again. I call it the leaky bucket. And it's just a real risk that a lot of investors, they're not reviewing this information every single month, but just leaving money on the table that they could literally be having, using and utilizing. And there's really no need for it. All we need is a few systems and a few people to run some key reports for us. And it's all the control we need and an hour of time a month to basically ensure that every pound and every penny that we should be making, we are actually making and we're taking.
And that's what Ultimate FD does.
Essentially, what we do is we do the products. So we basically design the finance function for people. So if somebody said, if somebody's in that mess, we would then work out what good looks like, what the reporting structure needs to look like, what the tracking categories you need to look like. We'd work out what team you need. There's four professionals that any business needs. We design what you need and the roles and responsibilities of each. And we design what good looks like. And we basically kind of, we do a project to bring all that in place and put everybody in place. So that once we're done, you've got a clean set of accounts. It's FD approved and reviewed. Got a team in place to run that for you, and then you've got, for the rest of your business career, you've got everything you need and all the financial tools and frameworks at your fingertips to progress and move forward. That's how we operate, and that's essentially what the company actually does. And as I shared previously, the reason that exists is because it, when I was in a place where we basically messed up on cash, all I knew was get clarity on what was going on in my portfolio of companies. And we spent, as I said, about 18 months trying to find somebody that could do it. We try FDs, we try bookkeepers, tax accountants, VAs, we recruit people in-house. And no one seems to be able to actually do what we need them to do. So we spent about £60,000 in 18 months and eventually found a solution which worked so effectively and so well. And basically we almost have to kind of sell that solution. We support people in getting that solution set up in their company. And the feeling when you finally get clarity, get control, you actually know how much money all these different properties are making you. You close down a few companies because it's just costing your accountancy fees. You don't actually need them. And the feeling when you start having consistent drawings from your portfolio, and you just know where every penny and every pound is pretty remarkable. And it amazes me that people don't have it. Like I can't even imagine running a business without having financial control and information in place to actually run that company. I don't know how people actually go about doing it when it's all in their head or it's on paper in front of them or on some 52 tab spreadsheet that they get confused as. like when they use.
Yeah, yeah, I completely agree. And, you know, information is power. Information gives you the ability to make good decisions. It gives you the ability to make strategic decisions about your business. It gives you freedom. So information, that's what we need. Good, financial, rigorous information. And the other piece of information that people will need is how to get in touch with you, Josh. So we'll put some notes in the podcast afterwards so that people can get in touch with you. If somebody's listening to this and thinks, do you know what? I need to speak to Josh Keegan. I need to get in touch with Ultimate FD because that's exactly what I need. I'd love to promote what you're doing because this is the other side of financial literacy. We might understand how money works, but if we don't really understand how the finances work, it's no good having a big picture on the macroeconomics if you can't have an interest and a finger on the microeconomics of your own business. Now that is the final question that I want to come on to, though, is talking about the bigger picture, the macroeconomic picture. You've got a really good grip on finance. You've got a good grip on property. You understand the property investing world and HMOs and so on. What do you think are some of the bigger challenges that we're going to be facing as HMO investors over the next year? And what do you think people's reaction should be to that? What can we do about it?
Very good question. Biggest challenges for HMO investors over the next year? Well, I'll tell you what I actually think it's going to get a little bit better. A little bit easier for a number of reasons. I think utilities are going to start to come down. I think that the demand, so the way I see it at the moment, I think we've got a lot of people actually exiting the HMO market, almost myself included. And when I said the HMO, I mean the professional HMO market. So what I've been doing is I've been shifting all of my HMOs, and basically every single one bar one of them will be either rented to the NHS on a long lease, rented to a charity on a long lease, or rented to a letting agent on a long lease. So I've kind of almost exited. So it's like all I'm doing is I'm getting paid a really decent rate across all of those, but it's all fixed return. You know, I've not got the peaks and troughs, and I've not got voids, and I've not got all that associated with it. The number of reasons why I'm doing that, but I actually think that overall, the rent-to-rent operators and the people that are taking those HMOs are actually going to do really well out of me, because I think that, like me, a lot of people are exiting the market, and I think a lot of people have sold HMOs. I've sold a number over the last few years, things that are maybe less sustainable, and I think that that's going to cause a huge reduction in supply. There's already too much demand from people in the marketplace. Rents keep going up. Rooms get filled absolutely rapidly. So my opinion is that HMOs are going to kind of come back for a bit of a resurgence. So the last few years, I think people are exiting. I think they're going to come back, and it's going to be more attractive to actually buy, hold, and rent. So as a HMO investor, I think it's a really good place to be. I think the last couple of years haven't been particularly good. I think it's been, you know, hopefully some of the listeners have done well in terms of exiting. I've done really well in exiting some of mine, like some crazy prices just before about 18 months ago, and the market shifted a little bit. But now I think if you're kind of in this now for the next couple of years, I think that you're going to see like a really, if you can weather the storm of rising interest rates and all those different elements, I think you're going to do really well over the next 12, 18 months, like really, really super well. What do you think?
And I would agree with you. I think that in a time of volatility, as an investor, this is often a great time to actually make a lot of money because other people are too scared to invest. Now, I agree with what you said earlier that in terms of, you know, you've got to make sure your deal stacks from day one and do the maths and, you know, make sure you put in a lot of those contingencies, as you say, maintenance, voids, etc. Although void levels these days are so incredibly low, you perhaps don't need to even determine that to be too much. But I think that what we've got to appreciate is because of inflation, when you buy a house today, let's say you and I, let's say you sold me one of your houses today, Josh, and we agreed a price. By the time you've actually done the conveyancing on that, it could be October by the time I actually get the keys for that property. Well, what's it going to be worth in October? It could have gone down. But it may well have gone up. Now, it may well have just leveled off, of course, and not done either. But let's assume it's gone up a little bit. You know, what you've got here is inflation constantly in the background, increasing housing prices. Not only have you got the price of that property, which is probably going to be worth more when you actually get the keys than today when you make the deal, you've also got rising rents. Because let's face it, that's the other issue, is that every week that goes on, you look at Spare Room, you look at Rightmove, rents are increasing there, and they are usually sticky upwards. Yeah. They don't tend to come back down. So in 4 months' time, when I get the keys off you for the property I bought from you, I can probably also not only put up the rents, but the rents are higher anyway in the marketplace. So those figures that I've put on my deal analyzer spreadsheet will be a little bit out of date by the time I buy the building. And as we all know, buying an HMO and refurbing it or getting it, you know, buying a house and turning it into an HMO takes time. Now, let's say I buy a house from you that is, say, just a standard three-bed semi or three-bed terrace house, and I'm going to turn it into a five-bed HMO. That might take me 4 or 5 months to do that. Where are rents going to be in 4 or 5 months' time? And I think the market is so incredibly strong that gives us a lot of succor as landlords, as investors, to realize that if you are providing something into a strong market, even though there may be a bit of a fluctuation in interest rates, there may be fluctuation in prices, you are investing in a long-term investment that is over time going to do extremely well. So I, like you, feel very confident in the market at the moment. I think you have to be brave. I think you have to be, you know, courageous. And I think you've got to keep looking out for the right deal, because certainly some people are trying to profit from the extra high prices, and because they know there's a lot of buyers looking for fewer properties, you know, prices have been quite keen. But equally, I'm seeing certain types of properties actually not selling and languishing on the market, and buyers being reluctant to buy because they're worried about interest rates. But I would say go for it. Do the maths, know your figures, and be confident, because I think that over the next 4 to 5 years, we're going to see HMOs as being, as you say, there's a bit of a return. They've come back into fashion, and you know, this is a great time if you're an HMO investor. So yeah, I'm very positive.
Where are you on two things? So one of them is, so I know you were kind of leading the charge on individual council tax room banding. Where's that now? Like in your head, like what does that look like for the outlook of individual banding at the moment?
Well, very interesting. So you know that we have gone through a consultation exercise. Well, we haven't, but the government did. The government launched a consultation earlier in the year, and we're waiting for them to come back to us about the details of that consultation. And we're hoping any day now we may get some feedback from the department. I actually received a letter from one of the civil servants in the department just 2 days ago saying they are still looking at the responses and they're still supplying a response. But there was a feeling within the letter that they were quietly optimistic that Michael Gove's assertion that only in rare or exceptional occurrences should HMO rooms be rebanded individually, that assertion was in the letter, which makes me feel quite confident that that means that they do want to support this amendment, which would be that HMO rooms cannot be banded individually for council tax. So I am quietly confident about that, but we haven't yet had it written in, you know, black and white. And until it actually goes into the law, Josh, you know, I'm holding off buying any champagne.
And what do you, the second one as well, I'd love to get your insight on, would be, and I'm not sure the answer on this, in terms of EPC and the fact I appreciate single let dwellings have got to go to a certain grade. Is that going to apply to HMOs as well, even though the landlords are paying the gas and electric?
So this is very interesting. Of course, EPCCs haven't yet made it into any written legislation. It's not in the Renters Reform Bill. It's not in the Levelling Up Bill. It's not even in, there was another bill that came out recently. the energy something or other bill, and it's not even in that. So as yet, the EPCC is just still kind of in the ether. It's a bit of a myth, but we've all started to talk about it and assume it's going to happen. Now, as you know, the government has a target of net zero by 2050, and the homes agenda is a big one in that, which is why new homes have to meet certain, you know, very strict energy criteria, including having electric chargers and, you know, additional levels of insulation and that kind of thing. But for homes that have already been built, and also remember that 20% of homes in the UK are rented, I think the government realises that if they insist that, whether it's an HMO or even a single buy to let, if they insist that EPCC is the minimum energy efficiency that's needed, they're going to continue to have this mass exodus out of the private rental sector, which is the last thing they need right now, given everything else that's happening. So I actually think that we've got to keep our eye on the agenda on this one, because I'm still waiting to see it actually be put into a bill that will be debated in the House of Commons, go to the House of Lords, come back to the House of Commons, and then actually be passed. That hasn't happened yet. Secondly, I think there's going to, if it does happen, there's going to be a lot of exemptions, and that we might find that the HMO fulfills an exemption because of the cost of putting that up to an EPCC will be more than the benefits. And even currently in EPC regulations, you can exempt certain properties if the cost of doing the work is too high. So I suspect that the exemptions rule may become a lot broader if EPCCs do get into the legislative framework. But that's what I'm waiting for first. So personally, I'm not really too worried about it. And as you say, because landlords tend to pay the bills on those properties anyway, it might be that it might be our next fight, Josh. We might have to fight for the minimum energy efficiency standards not to apply to HMOs, given that it's not really the tenants who are going to be footing the bill for those energy costs. So, yeah.
Interesting. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out, because I think another thing that's happened over the last, nine months, 18 months, is councils, and in particular seems to be, are really like wanting extra stuff like additional fire risk assessments and visits from the health and safety office in the council, etc. So I think I'm hoping because it's cost a lot, so I'm assuming a lot of, once again, landlords exiting the market because they don't want to pay for all this stuff. I totally would understand that. So I think there's going to be a little perfect storm personally. If the room banding and the EPCC doesn't impact HMOs, demand stays the same, supply's definitely gone down. I can only see it get working well for the next 18 months, 2 years, until, of course, everyone realises it's working well, and then everyone just starts doing professional HMOs again. We'll have to see how it plays out.
Yes, and we get into that next wave. And that's property investing for you, isn't it? It's peaks and troughs. It's high waves and low waves all the time, hills and valleys. And that's why it keeps you on your toes, and there's never a dull moment. And Josh, absolutely, there's never been a dull moment in this interview either. It's been really great to catch up with you, and thank you very much for sharing. Thank you for sharing the highs and lows that you've had in your previous business, and also thank you very much for sharing about Ultimate FD. It's a very, very valuable service that you're providing, and I know many people listening are very interested to have heard your how you learned, what reflections you had from running your HMO business, and how that's really served you in the latter years as well. And it's been really great to have you on today, and thank you so much for your time.
It's been an absolute pleasure and a joy to catch up. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the HMO Success Podcast. If you'd like to know more about how you can create a profitable HMO business, please visit our website, hmosuccess.co.uk, to find out more. We have plenty of free tools and information for you there, and also on our Facebook group, The Ultimate HMO Success System. We look forward to connecting with you very soon. Thanks for listening.